Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on climate change BS when we come back. You know, a $10 pizza has a 38% tax on it, and a Budweiser six-pack has a 43% tax. A fifth of Jack Daniels costs 72% in tax. Now, governments tax us all and anything that wiggles, moves, or squirms, but what is it that governments do to produce, prepare, or deliver, for which it gets paid 38% for a pizza, 43% for a beer, or 72% for a drink? Does the pizza parlor guy make a 38% profit on a pizza that he has to buy the ingredients to make, prepare it, cook it, serve it, and then pay rent on the store that you sit in to eat it? Now, why is it that government is getting paid more in tax than the people who actually produce, prepare, and deliver the goods and services that we all buy? Now, if you'd like more information about this tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Tax and status is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click on to the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. And once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget? All right, we're talking about climate change BS. This is a publication put out by the Heartland Institute. Remember, the Heartland Institute is located up in Chicago, Illinois, 19 South LaSalle Street, Suite 903, Chicago, Illinois, 60603. They're the ones that are responsible for putting out this big 850-page scientific manual. They're refuting, or the refutation, of this climate change crap that we've been subjected to and we're about to be taxed for. So I thought I'd give you the other side of the story over here in a step-by-step sequence of events. Today, let's take a look at snow. There's talk afoot that snow cover, especially here in the United States, has been diminished because of global warming. And especially out there in the West, you know, where you people are in California, Washington, Oregon, where you depend upon the snowpack up in the Sierras for your irrigation water down in the Central Valley, or in Idaho, Montana, and so on. There's a drought going on out in the Western United States. It's been going on for 10 years. And you know what the alleged cause of the drought is? CO2 in the atmosphere. Global warming. So this time, let's take a look at this thing of snow and snowpack, and let's see whether or not that's really true. It's been alleged that it is. There was a pope, I think his name was Pope Innocent, back about 1150 A.D., and he made a pretty crafty observation. I thought for a pope it was pretty good. He said, "You give me a kid until he's 7 years old, and he will be a Catholic for life." That's a pretty powerful statement. Now, Adolf Hitler added a little something to that. He said, if you tell a lie often enough, everyone will believe it. If you just keep repeating it over and over, you can know that it's a lie, but you'll believe it. And you'll start repeating it yourself because it's a popular cliche, like, I like Ike, I like Ike, I like Ike. That was what we were chanting back in 1952, you know, when President Eisenhower was running for president. It's like a sound bite. You get mesmerized by it. So if somebody keeps telling you something often enough, you know, you can be a Catholic. All they do, they keep telling you this Catholic dogma over and over and over and over again. Hell, by the time you're 30 years old, you've memorized that Catholic dogma. Son, you're going to be a Catholic until you die. And I've observed that myself. In fact, I was talking to old Frank Batten here not too long ago, and he said, I'm a recovering Catholic. Recovering. He will never get Catholicism out from between his ears. That's how ingrained it is. You people that have been through the Marines, you will die a Marine. There ain't any way in hell you're going to get that Marine ideology out of your mind. So if we can get you when you're young, we can make you into whatever it is we want you to be for the rest of your life. This is why it's so important in educational circles. First of all, they needed to get us weaned from homeschool, parochial school, into public school. Then once they got you into public school, they needed to get you into public school from age 6 to 16. Then they needed kindergarten. If they could get you a year earlier, they could start indoctrinating you earlier. Now they've got preschool. The sooner they can get you, the better. And that's why we like to have people working in the marketplace, their children being looked after by surrogate teachers, you know, day schools, and so that we can divorce them from family values and the Ten Commandment model and put them into this Communist Manifesto model of international geopolitics, education, economics. Now, it's based upon lies and deceptions, but it's very effective, extremely effective. So every night, every day, when you went to public school, remember how they used to talk about evolution? It was evolution this and evolution that and evolution. To this day, I don't care who you are, where you're at, what your educational background is, you believe in evolution. You may sit there and say, oh, no, I don't. Well, okay, that's your manifestation. That's your public statement. But the truth is you believe in it. And we can tell how much you believe in it by your actions. You'll know them by their fruits. You'll know them by their fruits. Now, in order to sell global warming, we have to keep it in front of you day in and day out. Every news broadcast has at least one statement about global warming and CO2. Global warming and CO2. See, you've got it in your mind. Global warming, global warming, global warming. It causes every problem from ingrown toenails to cancer. Global warming, global warming, global warming. If there's a problem, it's global warming. All right, now with that in mind, let's take a look at the other side of the story. And then the Heartland Institute put out the opposite. The government is selling you global warming. And they've got a motive for doing it. They've got a modus operandi, and they've got a motive, they've got an agenda. They want to raise taxes. And in order to raise taxes, we have to get the people of the nations so psyched out, so excited about this thing of global warming that they want to do something about it. Or at least they'll shut up while the rest of us are doing something about it. So they have come up with a number of problems, like the glaciers are melting, the polar bears are dying, hurricanes are increasing, the sea level is rising, and there's droughts of fire and wildfires and carbon sequestration, and We've got the Arctic Ocean over here where the ice is melting off of it and so on. All of these problems, and this is just the tip of the iceberg, 70 of them. We got these 70 problems, and we've got a solution, but we just have to spend more money and commit ourselves to doing that. And it's going to change the kind of automobile that you drive and the source of your electricity and so on. And I'm not here to advocate coal-fired power plants. I mean, hell, if you can produce electricity with a windmill, I guess that's fine. I'm not complaining about windmills producing electricity. But the moral to the story is the coal-fired power plant over there, which may be a very bad idea, is not causing all these problems. And you driving your automobile over here isn't causing all that problem either. But that's what we're blaming it on. And we keep telling you that. Brian Williams and Katie Couric, you know, they keep telling you that. Charlie Gibson, they're constantly, every newscast, they'll say, we all need to be more aware of and we all need to work harder to in solving this global warming problem. All right. Now, this global warming problem over here is a charade. It's necessary and imperative for the goals and aspirations that government and big business have for us. And I'm not here trying to get you to vote this way or that way, you know, trying to get you to change it. Hell, this track has already lined up with the train coming down at 100 miles an hour. My advice, just get the hell off the track. This train's coming through. Forget trying to stop this train. But so that you can know and understand who's doing what to you, when, and how, and I think that this is a very important book. This is called Climate Change Reconsidered, the report of the Non-Governmental International Panel on Climate Change. And so let's take a look at snow, page 137. Am I right? No, 347. Here we go, snow. Chapter 6. Now, the IPCC claims snow cover has decreased in most regions, especially in spring, and decreases in snowpack have been documented in several regions worldwide based upon annual time series of mountain snow water equivalent and snow depth. Now, that was a statement put out by the Government International Panel on Climate Control in 2007 on page 43. Later on in the report, the authors claim observations show a global scale decline of snow and ice over many years, especially since 1980, and increasing during the past decade, despite growth in some places and little change in others. So says the report on page 376. Well, now, has global warming really caused less snow? Now, we addressed this question regarding the polar regions in chapters 3 and 4 of this report. But here in chapter 6, we focus on, as the IPCC does, on the studies conducted here in North America. Now, in a study conducted by Brown in 2000, employing data from Canada and the United States to reconstruct the monthly snow cover properties over the mid-latitude from 40 to 60 north latitude regions of North America, dating back to 1900, finding evidence of what he described as a general 20th century increase in North American snow cover extent, with significant increases in winter in the months from December to February, snow water equivalent averaging 3.9% per decade. This finding is consistent with climate model simulations that indicate increased precipitation in response to global warming, but it covers too little time to tell us much about the cause of this increased snow cover. All right, so in the first paragraph, we find that in a study conducted by a guy named Brown in 2000, going back to 1900, between latitude 40 and 60 north in the regions of North America that go back to the early 1900s, starting in 1900 through 2000, so 100-year period, averaging 3.9% moisture content in the snow, that the amount of snow has actually increased on average in that 100-year period. So global warming, CO2 in the atmosphere has not caused any less snow. Now, I know you guys out in California are sitting there saying, oh my God, you know, but what? That's true. In the last 10 years, you guys have had a drought. No doubt about it. But just because you've had a drought in California doesn't mean that we've got a drought in Missouri. Now, I've observed here over the last 10 years that we've had much less snow than we had in the previous 10 or 15 years right here. But keep in mind, boys and girls, that they were talking about an average. And an average over 100 years is something different than an average over 50 years, which is something different than an average over 25 years, which is something different than an average over 10 years. So when we go back 100 years and we look at the 100-year period, the snow cover here in North America is about the same. In fact, it's a little bit more than it has been on the average. The last few years, a little bit more than the average over the past 100 years. Although the snow is not evenly distributed. They're getting more snow. I've noticed now they had snow down here in Atlanta, Georgia. That was quite a sight. This past winter and the winter before, we had some snow further south, which is unusual. And you people in California probably are sitting there saying, well, we needed that snow that fell on Florida and Georgia and Texas out here in California. I don't deny it. And one of these days, it'll probably return to normal. Now, in the old days, we simple-minded people like us, you know, the plumbers, carpenters, and electricians, the common people, the farmers, you know, and housewives, we all attributed droughts, floods, and upsets in the weather to God. We always said, oh my God, you know, we always use that term, oh my God, look at the water, look at the snow, look at this, look at that. Now, that's not very scientific, and I don't claim that it is, but I'm not sure that you people out there, you scientists, have all the powers that you'd like the rest of us simple-minded people to believe that you have. Like that you've got your fingers on the thermostat of planet Earth and you're going to turn the temperature down. You know, I think you're going to take an SH and then go fall back in it. That's what my view is. That's just from the simple-minded guys down here on the street. Now, keep in mind that these are scientific studies that have been made by scientific people over the past 100 years that were not getting their government grants paid for by the taxpayers. The people that are being cited here in this book are the guys on the other side of the camp. You got the government whores that are getting paid by government tax dollars to turn out reports that tell you that there's less and less snow and it's caused by CO2. You're getting more and more storms and it's caused by carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. The polar bears are dying and it's caused by carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Now that's the sales pitch. And the sales pitch is for the purposes of the carbon tax, which is for the purpose of making the biggest tax increase in history. But the reality of it is that there hasn't been a shortage of snow. Now, Brown, in 2000, employed data from Canada and the United States to reconstruct monthly snow cover properties over mid-latitude 40 to 60 degrees north regions of North America back to the early 1900s, finding evidence of what he described as a general 20th century increase in North American snow cover extent. A guy by the name of Moore et al., 2002, studied a longer period of time in their analysis of a 103-meter ice core retrieved from a high-elevation site on Mount Logan, Canada's highest mountain, which is located in the heavily glaciated St. Elias region of the Yukon. From this deep core, as well as from some shallow coring and snow pit sampling, they derived a snow accumulation record that extended over three centuries, from 1693 to 2000, which indicated that heavier snow accumulation at their study site was generally associated with warmer tropospheric temperatures over northwestern North America. Now, tropospheric temperatures, that's way, way up in the atmosphere. When you get up into what they call the troposphere, that's, oh hell, that's up there 15 miles. That's way up there in the right there at the edge of space. And their study shows that because of an increase in temperature in the troposphere, there was an increased snow cover dating back some 300 years. But there's more to the story. Over the first half of their record, there is no significant trend in the snow accumulation data. From 1850 onward, however, there is a positive trend that is significant. At the 95% confidence level, which indicates that recovery from the cold conditions of the Little Ice Age began in the mid-1800s, well before there was a large increase in the air's CO2 concentration. This finding is further strengthened by the temperature reconstruction by Esper et al. In 2002, which places the start of modern warming at about the same time as that suggested by Moore et al.'s snow data, contradicting the temperature record of Mann et al. In 1998-99, which puts the beginning of the modern warming trend at about 1910. Notice here that there's a contradiction. Well, now you got one guy, he comes along, he says A. Another guy comes along and says B. In our book, that says, he said, she said. He said, she said. He said, she said. So how in the hell do we know? And that's the point. Just because you say it doesn't make it true. Just because you're alleging that there's less snow doesn't mean that there's less snow. Just because you're alleging the glaciers are diminishing. Hell, out in the western United States, there isn't any doubt but what the snow has diminished over the last 10 years. But overall, worldwide, overall, North America-wide, snow has not decreased. It has increased. Now, I don't know if that's good or bad. If anything, maybe we should say, let's blame this additional snow. Let's blame the increased size of the glaciers on global cooling instead of global warming. And by the way, the world's temperature over the last 10 years has been in a cooling trend. But just because the cooling trend over the last 10 years shows up does not mean that we're in an overall cooling trend. Remember, the overall warming trend began in 1850. And it may go on as an overall warming trend for another 150 or 250 or 350 years. We don't know. During a cold trend, there are warm periods. And during a warm trend, there are cooling periods. 10 years doesn't tell us much. When we're looking at geologic time, you know, billions and billions of years ago, what in the hell is 10 or 20 years out of billions and billions, boys and girls? Assuming that you subscribe to the evolutionary philosophy of Lyell and company. Now, Schwartz and then Schmindlin in 2002 examined past issues of storm data, a publication of the U.S. National Weather Service, to compile a blizzard database for the years 1959 to 2000 for the Center Minius United States. This effort resulted in a total of 438 blizzards being identified in the 41-year record. Well, look at that. 438 blizzards in 41 years. Let's just try that out and see how many that is a year. 438. Divided by 41. Well, that's 10.6 per year. Now, in 1888, there was this god-awful, horrendous blizzard that hit the east coast of the United States. But that's like Hurricane Katrina. That's an anomaly. It occurs once in a while, but that doesn't mean that because there was a blizzard in 1888 that we're in some kind of a blizzard trend and that the blizzards are going to take over and blow us off the continent. It hasn't happened, didn't happen, isn't very likely to. And so there's about 10 per year. 438 blizzards over 41 years, yielding an average of 10.7 blizzards per year. Linear regression analysis revealed a statistically significant increase in the annual number of blizzards during the 41-year period. However, the total area affected by blizzards each winter remained relatively constant. If these observations are both correct, average blizzard size must have decreased over the four-decade period. On the other hand, as the researchers note, it may also be that the NWS, that's the National Weather Service, is recording smaller, weaker blizzards in recent years and went unrecorded in that period, as occurred also in the official record of tornadoes in the United States. In a study of winter weather variability, Woodhouse in 2003 generated a tree ring-based reconstruction of the SWE for the Gunnison River Basin of western Colorado that spans the periods from 1569 to 1999. This work revealed, in her words, that the 20th century is notable for several periods that lack extreme years. And she reports that the 20th century is notable for several periods that contain few or no extreme years for both low and high. Now, Lawson in 2003 examined meteorological records for information pertaining to the occurrence and severity of blizzards within the prairie ecozone of western Canada. He did it over the period from 1953 to 1997. No significant trends were found in central and eastern locations. However, there was a significant downward trend in blizzard frequency in the western prairies, and Lawson remarks that this trend is consistent with results found by others that indicate a decrease in cyclone frequency over western Canada. And he also notes that the blizzards that do occur there exhibit no trend in the severity of their individual weather elements. These findings, in his words, serve to illustrate that the changes in extreme weather events anticipated under climate change may not always be for the worse, that the climate change may be for the better. Now, there's another factor that I'm going to plug into your brain here. There's a necessity for CO2 in the atmosphere, just like there's a necessity for oxygen. Now, the atmosphere is made up of about 0.5% of carbon dioxide, and it's made up of about 21% oxygen. Now, we know that from amber samples in times past, the oxygen content here on planet Earth was 38%. 38%. From the time of Adam and Eve up until Noah's flood, 38% was the norm. Then, after the flood, after the destruction of vegetation, the oxygen content of the world has declined to 21%, where it has stabilized and remained about there. There are local locations in smog areas like Los Angeles or Cleveland, where there will be less oxygen than 21% in the atmosphere, but those are on rare occasions, and they go back on average worldwide to about 21%. Now, that oxygen comes from the vegetation here on planet Earth. So every time you cut down a tree, you're destroying the oxygen-creating capacity of the planet to some degree. Now, on the other hand, the animal life on the planet, people like you and me, when we inhale oxygen, goes through our body, nourishes our bodies, and then we exhale and we exhale carbon dioxide. There's a symbiotic relationship between the plants and animal life on the planet. The plants need carbon dioxide and we need oxygen. And the trees and the flowers and the plants provide that oxygen that we need, and we provide the carbon dioxide that they need. Now, in studies, when you put plants in a greenhouse and then you take a CO2 bottle in there and you open up the CO2 bottle and you give the plants more carbon dioxide, they grow faster and they're healthier. The same thing happens with human beings. If you take human beings and you put them up in the mountains, they don't do as well because there's less oxygen. So you give them an oxygen bottle at 15,000 feet and they do a lot better. We noticed that with airplanes right away. That when we fly airplanes up to high altitudes, we can't breathe very well, so we take oxygen with us and then we can live a lot better. Does it seem like to you logical then to conclude that the more carbon dioxide there is in the atmosphere, the better that will help plants to grow, and the better it will help the plants to grow and to produce more oxygen, which you and I need? And as these plants grow to be bigger and healthier and better, won't that benefit us? Isn't bigger, healthier cabbage and lettuce a benefit to us, which is produced by more carbon dioxide? It would look like to me then that the coal-fired power plant, which is putting more carbon dioxide up into the atmosphere, is doing all of us a big favor. In the same way that the plants, when they grow bigger, better, and healthier, put more oxygen up into the atmosphere. So why don't you think about that for a minute while we give you your mid-course reminder that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, it's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. And it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're looking at climate change BS, a report put out by the Heartland Institute. It's called Climate Change Reconsidered. The price is $154. I got to tell you, I got my copy free. They sent it to me for no cost, gratis. They're not dummies. They knew that if they'd sent it to me, I'd probably review it. And if I reviewed it, then that would help them sell more copies. It's 850 pages. It refutes nearly every argument advanced by the government scientists whose agenda is to continue receiving their government grants and, as whores, put out whatever report the government agency that hired them wants to hear. They're whores, and they'll tell you whatever it is that the government wants you to know, whether it's true or false. Now, not everything that they've reported is false. You have to tell the truth, at least. That's been my experience. 75% of the time is pretty good for truth. Then just blend into that about 25% error, and that will keep everybody deceived 100% of the time. The price of the book's $154. I think it's well worth it. It's about 18 cents a page. 18 cents a page. Let me just do that arithmetic again. 154 divided by 850. 17.64 cents. That's about 18 cents a page. There isn't a page in here that doesn't have some new factoid or some new understanding that you probably have never heard before. I was amazed. I just flipped the page over. So I like looking in the Bible. You just open it up at any page and start reading. And it'll tell you exactly the opposite from what you heard in Sunday school. With this book, just flip it open to any page under any subject over here, and it'll tell you the exact opposite from what you've been hearing on PBS, ABC, NBC, and CBS. Without a doubt. You can go to their webpage. It's called www.heartland.org. The phone is 312-377-4000. It's area code 312-377-4000. It's published by the Heartland Institute. They're located at 19 South LaSalle Street, Suite 903, Chicago, Illinois, 60603. I know you didn't get all that down, so why don't you try it again? The Heartland Institute. H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D Institute. 19 South LaSalle Street, Suite 903. They're in Chicago, Illinois. In Chicago. And the zip code is 60603. $154. Now, much of this information that's contained here is also available free on their website. And you'll find that at www.co2science.org. Under this heading is called Snow. So if you went to www.co2science.org, then you plugged in subject, and then you put in snow, or glaciers, or hurricanes, any of the headings, subject matter, it'll probably give you these articles one at a time. You may have this book, or at least most of it may be online free. Why don't you look for it and see. If you'd like to have a copy in your hot little hands, then you may have to go to the Heartland Institute and pay them the $154, which I think is well worth it. If I wanted the information, I think the $154. If you want a recommendation from me, I think it's well worth the $154. Seems like it's a little pricey, but it's a pretty thick book. Pretty heavy-duty information, too. Well-documented. Just looking here at the subject matter on snow, looking under the references, let me just count them up for you. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 on that page. 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. 21 scientific references here on snow. Now, you got the government whores telling you that there's less snowfall and there's less snowpack, and it's all caused by CO2 in the atmosphere. I think CO2 is a net benefit. I think that they'd have a more logical argument if they said it was putting carbon monoxide in the atmosphere, or chlorohydrocarbons, or something else, and that that's what's causing our problem. CO2 is a beneficial gas. CO2 in the atmosphere is like oxygen in the atmosphere. What would you think if they came to you and said, oh my God, there's too much oxygen in the atmosphere, and because of all this oxygen, which we've got to control and we've got to put less of it in, we've got to lower the oxygen content by 5%. What the hell kind of sense does that make? Well, lowering the carbon dioxide content in the atmosphere doesn't make any more sense. The plants out there need it. Scientific studies, which are outlined in some sections of this book, will show you that when you take a greenhouse and close it up and you shoot CO2 in there, CO2 gas, the plants grow faster, healthier, and more luxurious. Put on bigger fruit and they're healthier plants, which give off more oxygen. It's a net plus. It's not a negative. It's a net plus. Now, I don't know whether burning fossil fuels to produce carbon dioxide is a good or a bad idea. I didn't come here to argue that. But the fact that the coal-fired power plant is putting carbon dioxide up into the atmosphere is a plus. It's not a negative. And I think just common sense ought to tell you that. Now, if it was putting some other kind of gas up in the atmosphere, you know, then they might have a better argument. But putting oxygen, nitrogen, or carbon dioxide into the atmosphere isn't a negative, it's a plus. Now, there's another section in here called storm surges. You know what we had with Hurricane Katrina, these big hurricanes? We have these storm surges. Listen to this. One of the many catastrophes said to be caused by this global warming is the heaving of the world's seas beyond their normal bounds in more frequent and increasingly violent storm surges. So the following section summarizes the findings of a number of pertinent papers on the subject. Now, I don't know how many pertinent papers there are on the subject of storm surges, but I guess I can count them. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 papers. And they start off here with DeLange and Grib 2000 analyzed trends in sea level data obtained from several tide gauges located within Tauranga Harbor, New Zealand, over the period 1960 to 1998. In studying the seasonal, interannual, and decadal distributions of storm surge data, they discovered a considerable decline in the annual number of storm surge events in the latter half of the nearly four-decade-long record. A similar trend was noted in the magnitude of storm surges. In addition, maximum water levels, including tides, also declined over the last two decades. So now, when Brian Williams comes on and he makes a report and tells you about how bad all this is, the actual observation from that one source, now that's just one study down in New Zealand. You need a few more around the world. The one study in New Zealand doesn't set it in cement, but it tells us a little piece of the story, doesn't it? Yes, glaciers are melting. Yes, there are places in the world where snowfall has decreased, but overall, worldwide, it hasn't in either case. Now, that's kind of important. It tells us a part of the story. Is the sky falling? Not yet. Not yet. Now, decadal variations, that's 10 years, or variations over 10 years, in the data were linked to the Interdecadal Pacific Oscillation, it's also known as the IPO and the El Niño Southern Oscillation, known as the ENSO, with La Niña events producing more storm surge days than El Niño events. In addition, wavelet analysis of annual storm surge frequency data indicated that before 1978, the frequency was enhanced by the IPO, and subsequently it has been attenuated. Pirazzoli in 2000 analyzed tide gauge and meteorological wind and atmospheric pressure data for the slightly longer period of 1951 to 1997 along the northern portion of the Atlantic coast of France. This effort revealed that the number of atmospheric depressions or storms and strong surge winds in this region are becoming less frequent, and that ongoing trends of climate variability show a decrease in the frequency and hence the gravity of coastal flooding. Pirazzoli suggests these findings should be reassuring, especially for those concerned about coastal flooding. Raicich, Rakic, I guess that is, in 2003, analyzed 62 years of sea level data for the period of July 1939 through June of 2001 at Trieste in the northern Atlantic in an attempt to determine historical trends of positive and negative surge anomalies. This work led to the discovery that weak and moderate positive surges did not exhibit any definite trends, while strong positive surges clearly became less frequent over the period of study, even in the face of a gradually rising sea level. Presumably, in Reichek's words, as a consequence of a general weakening of the atmospheric activity, which was likewise found by Pirazzoli to be the cause or the case for Brittany. So based on data for the somewhat longer period of 1901 to 1990, Wroblewski, Wroblewski, in 2001, in a study determined that there was a linear increase in mean annual sea level at the southern Baltic seaport of Kolobrzeg, K-O-L-O-B-R-Z-E-G, Kolobrzeg, of 12 plus or minus 2 centimeters per century. And over the same period, however, there was no trend in annual sea level maximum. Two high values stood out above the rest in the 1980s, but two similar spikes occurred in the 1940s. There were half a dozen comparable high values in the first two decades of the record. In light of the slow upward trend in mean sea level, therefore, it is extremely surprising that annual maximum sea levels due to storm surges did not likewise rise over the past century. One can only conclude these events must have become less intense over the same time interval. Pause. Now, I was watching TV the other day, and there's some little country, Niue, I think it's N-U-E-U-A, just an island nation out in the South Pacific. And the president of Niue came out to the United Nations, and he complained that his island nation was being inundated, and it was being caused by the United States. There's not very many people live here, a few thousand. And they showed where, you know, they had a lagoon out there, and they said, well, we used to go fishing out there in the lagoon, but now that lagoon has increased in size, and it has swallowed up much of the landmass over here. They got a little low seawall over there, and he said now these storm surges are topping our little land wall. In other words, his island nation is being submerged. Now, I don't know why that's happening, and I can't explain that. Are the oceans getting deeper? Well, yeah, by 2 centimeters, but you know, a centimeter, if you take a meter, it's 39 inches, and a centimeter is 1/100th of 39 inches. So, you know, what's 1/100th of a 39 inches? I mean, it's a 16th of an inch or something like that. And the sea level rise has been 2 or 3 16ths of an inch. And it's inundating his country. Now, it's the only country that I know of that's complaining. There's some low country in Holland, low country in Bangladesh, low country in Florida, no doubt about it. And there's predictions. I've seen some predictions that say that in the next 100 years that the sea level is going to rise by 3 feet. That's a meter. 3 feet. Now, that's going to be pretty significant, and I could see that, yeah, there's a lot of ground going to get inundated with water if it rises by a meter. But if all of the ice melted off of Antarctica and Greenland and let's say the temperature rose and those places became habitable again, wouldn't we have a net increase in land mass? Now, when we take a look at Canada, Siberia, Antarctica, we find that there used to be warmer temperatures there. Between the time of the Garden of Eden and the Flood, the whole world was habitable. The whole world. Under a canopy that kept the temperature at about 70 degrees year-round. Now, those are estimates that have been run out by a number of science studies, you know, models. And it would occur to me that if we could get back to that, or if the Earth went back to that model, would that be bad? About half the Earth was water and about half the Earth was land mass. I'm not sure that these changes that are occurring are all that bad. You know, if you've got real estate in South Florida and the water goes up by 3 feet, yeah, I could understand your consternation. But I'm at 1,200 feet and 3 feet of increased water isn't going to affect me at all. It might do a lot of good in Greenland and Antarctica. So maybe there's a trade-off there. Did anybody ever thought about the trade-off? Furthermore, for us simpletons down here, these are events that are bigger than we are. I remember a story where two astronomers were talking, and one of them just come unhinged, and he said, "Oh, my God!" And the other one said, "Well, what seems to be the problem, Charlie?" And he said, the sun is going to burn out in 100 million years. And then the other one looked at his calculations. He said, "Oh, no, you're wrong. The sun isn't going to burn out in 100 million years. It's 100 billion years. And Charlie, the first one, said, "Oh, thank God." You know, the difference between 100 million and 100 billion, you're talking about numbers that are so damn big. You know, you and I are going to live for, what, 70 years? Now, it is true that our sun is burning up at the rate of 5 feet an hour. And if you just extrapolate that 750,000 miles in diameter by 5 feet an hour, according to my Sharp EL1197G3, in 100,000 years, our sun is going to burn out. And I'm sitting here saying, well, what in the hell is that a problem to me for? I'm already 70. You know, I'm already on borrowed time. And my children are going to live for 70 more years, and their children for 70, and so on. There are some events, boys and girls, out there in the universe that you and I cannot control, like black holes. And the temperature here on planet Earth, you know, Al Gore wrote a book, and he said it's an inconvenient truth, and we got this heating going on, and we gotta step in here and control the thermostat. Has it ever occurred to these fools that there are events going on in the universe that are bigger than we are? Why don't we sit back and relax? If there's a God in heaven, let him take care of the thermostat. Has anybody ever thought of that? Let God run the thermostat. I would feel a lot safer knowing that there is a God in heaven that's controlling the thermostat and the temperature on planet Earth, rather than, let's say, the Chinese Communist Party in China, or maybe the Russian Communist Party, or Putin in Moscow, or even Barack Obama in Washington, D.C. I'm not sure that the Earth's thermostat in the hands of generals and politicians is a very good idea. You know, mull it over a little bit. The idea that men are going to control the temperature here on the planet, I don't think is a very good one. In any event, when looking at storm surges out here and storms in general, it seems safe to conclude that storm surges around the world have not responded to rising temperatures during the 20th century. In the majority of cases investigated, they have decreased. And additional information on this topic, including reviews of newer publications as they become available, can be found at the website www.co2science.org, subject Ocean Storm Surge. Now, I just cited to you just a two-page story here on storm surges. It's on page 351 and page 352 of the Heartland Institute Climate Change Science book. Then they've got a website at the end of it. I haven't looked at the website myself, but my guess is this article that's right here probably is taken from that webpage. It's got seven sources to it. Now the next one, 6.9, talks about temperature variability. And then we get on to wildfires. Page 355 through 360. Are these wildfires out in the western United States? Have you been watching out here in California? They have a thing out there called the Santa Ana winds. This spring they had a big fire up in the Coast Range, but we're next to the coast, up near Santa Barbara, north of Santa Barbara. And then down in Los Angeles County, along the mountains down there, the San Gabriel Mountains and so on, they have these Santa Ana winds, 70 mile an hour winds. Hell, that's hurricane force winds, you know, 70 miles an hour. And then they get a fire going and it burns a bunch of houses down. And then right away, Brian Williams says, oh my God, look at these wildfires in California caused by CO2 and global warming. But is that really true? Is that a real scientific fact, or is that just assuming facts, not in evidence again? And that's where we're at. Assuming facts that aren't in evidence. So next time I'm going to take up this thing of wildfires. I'm about out of time now, but storm surges, polar bears, storms, snow, temperature, drought, sea level, floods and hurricanes and glaciers. We've covered those so far. And every time we look at one of these and we look at the science behind it, we find out that the world is not coming to an end, and that all of this hype about global warming and CO2 is just that. It's hype. It's a sales pitch with an agenda attached called tax increase. Pure and simple. All right, I'm out of time again, so let me remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.